I'm Nick Harcourt. It's 88.5 FM. I am so happy to be here with a bunch of our very coolest listeners at the Capitol Studios in Hollywood. Please welcome the Decemberists.
Hello. That was called Severed. This is called We All Die Young.
Time to go home. everything it ended. The world was just a grubby balloon. When I spoke up, said sorry if I've offended, this voice came from the back of the room, all screaming from the back of the room.
It's 88.5, Nick Harkle, your host, and it's the morning show, although it's a late night session we're playing back for you today. We recorded in Hollywood a couple of nights ago with the Decemberists. Again, guys, give it up, the Decemberists live.
Thank you.
I want to thank the band for being here. Colin, who we're going to start off a conversation with in just a moment, but also Chris, Nora, Kelly, John, Nate, and Jenny as well. Thank you guys for coming and doing this for us. Why don't we start where we probably should, which is to talk about the new album, I'll Be Your Girl. And the first thing I read about this album was that you said it was time to change things up a little bit. You made a couple of statements where you felt that this time around you wanted to change the way you recorded, maybe the way you wrote. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I just started to recognize for myself, sort of habits and patterns that I was falling into. I think I was maybe intuiting that. And also feeling like maybe I, as a songwriter, and maybe to a certain extent us as a band, had gotten very comfortable, you know, doing things that had been relatively successful, so why mess with it? But it felt like that we kind of had to mess with something.
Well, you've been a band for 17 years, so I would imagine after that amount of time, you fall into a comfort zone, so to speak.
And I think we have a record of you know, going back and messing with our own pattern. I think once we get too comfortable doing something, we end up doing something a little weird, and that might be this moment.
So as a songwriter, how do you approach writing songs once you've decided that it's time to make things a little bit different? I mean, how do you look at that as the guy who's writing the words, for example, and what you're writing about?
I don't know. It's an unknowable thing. I do such a poor job kind of writing to order, you know. I tend to just write in whatever comes. I feel like maybe I was a little bit more circumspect about my writing. I was being more of a self-editor. And also kind of trying to push myself to sort of trust intuitions more rather than calculated, you know, well, it should go to the, you know, the verse here or the chorus in the middle eight, you know, letting things sort of evolve a little bit on their own.
So maybe even changing the structure of how you
occasionally
put a song together.
Yeah. I don't know really how to describe it. I think it's a little bit of just being an editor and kind of knowing when things can be let out and when things should be taken in.
Talking of being an editor, the first thing I noticed about this collection of songs, and I'm generalizing here, but they're shorter.
Exactly. Yeah.
So There's a lot of 3.5 minute little pop jams.
I know
on this.
In fact, there's a couple songs where we would finish them in the studio and be like, "That's just too short. Something else has to happen," which is not something I've run into. A problem I've run into in the past.
but then do you get to the moment where you go, no, it's done, it's okay.
Yeah. I think I was more interested in writing with economy maybe than I had in the past, you know, writing sort of these blown out things, which is, you know, we also have at least one blown out song on the record.
Now, you tried a lot of these songs out on the road as well. Is that something that you've always done before you record?
That's the other thing. That was kind of new. We haven't done that, like, kind of road testing, quote unquote, songs, I think, since 2005, you know, around Picaresque. Like, the songs that are on Picaresque, we had played live when we were touring a lot. But then I think once we got into a different cycle, you know, we would learn songs in the studio and then tour them. And so this is the first time in a long time that we'd actually played new songs live.
How do songs change from the road to the studio? Or vice versa, for that matter?
Well, it's interesting. Like that song, We All Die Young, for example, started out, I had sort of imagined it as like kind of a weird Leonard Cohen rave up. I don't know if, it, you know, kind of early 70s, like in his pill days. And then we played it once in rehearsal and it was really great. We have a recording of it where we just learned it and we all played it and it was super fun and it sounds great. And then we started playing it on the road, and I think as we played it more and more, I mean, you guys can correct me if I'm speaking out of turn.
Please jump in.
But it felt like it starting to become less and less interesting as we got to know it more, until when we came into the studio to record it, it felt kind of uninspired. It felt like kind of just this bluesy ramble.
So what did you do to it?
So we just kind of Gary Glitterized it.
Ooh.
You know, I think we were talking, as we were coming into the studio, talking a lot about references and, you know, early glam, Roxy Music, Eno, T-Rex was coming up a lot. And
you're talking my language now.
Yeah. And actually, I think it was John Congleton, our producer, is like, I was kind of hearing this as sort of a jock rock song. And immediately, I don't think any of us resisted it. It was like, oh, yeah, let's get to it. Let's do a jock rock
song. Turn it into a Slade song.
Yeah, exactly. and everybody kind of knew what to do. Like, oh, well, I won't play guitar on this part, and a different organ should be on this part. And it all came together that way.
Let's come back and talk a little bit more. Why don't we go back to a couple of more songs? You're listening to 88.5 FM, the Nick Harcourt Show, The Decemberists live at Capitol Studios. Two more songs. What's the next one?
This one's called Sucker's Prayer.
All right.
Somebody, but I don't know how. lost along the way. And if you think that will always be the case, won't you listen to my plea? Make a sucker's prayer, just go and leave it there. When I wanna love somebody, but I don't.
This one's called Once in My Life.
you.
It's 88.5. I'm Nick Harker, your host. Thanks for joining us on The Morning Show. We're listening to a live session recorded a couple of nights ago at Capitol Studios in Hollywood. Our guests are the Decemberists, and if you guys would like to give it up again, I'm sure they'd love to hear it.
Thank you.
All right, Colin, so we were talking about the songs, and we were talking about the different way that you guys went about writing and recording this album. And one of the things that you did was you brought in a new producer. Mm-hmm. And I'm always intrigued to talk to bands about working with producers, because different people bring different things to the plate. So two questions. First of all, what is the role of a producer when you bring somebody in to help you record the songs? And then the guy you brought in, John Congleton, right? Mm-hmm. What was it about him that made you want to hire him?
God, what a producer does is as much a mystery to me now as it was when I was a kid, you know, like looking at produced by, you know, Lily White or whoever. I think to my mind, I mean, a producer can be a vast number of things. The way that we've always worked with them is best as sort of collaborators, co-conspirators, some like an objective viewpoint. Somebody who's also focused on getting sounds, like the very basics, but also a good sounding board for just structure, arrangement, and general approach. I mean, we kind of produce ourselves a lot. We have lots of opinions.
Is that why it's important to have somebody else sort of helping?
Yeah, so having somebody else just being a tiebreaker or just somebody outside of the band. But then, you know, I think John was invited to kind of get in there and, you know, maybe even overrule some of our opinions occasionally. And we like, I mean, John, we were fans of his work with other people. He felt, you know, we'd been working with Tucker Martine, a producer, for the last 10 years. He felt like the biggest contrast to Tucker's work. And also he was just a nice guy and seemed like somebody you could spend, you know, 10 hours a day in a windowless room with, which is kind of the most
kind of what you
thing.
Did.
Yeah, yeah.
How long were you in the studio on this from start to finish? Did you do it all in one run, or did you do it in bits and pieces?
We did it all in one run in about a 5-week chunk. Yeah, and then mixed it after that.
You also worked in a different studio as well.
Yeah.
Any particular reason?
It was a studio that Chris started managing called Halfling.
Oh, so you got a deal?
Side project.
We got a deal.
I don't actually know if we got a deal.
We got a smoking deal.
We got a smoking deal.
It was a cool building. This new studio. There's a skate bowl in the middle. Not that any of us skate, but it was a cool place to set up drums and get crazy drum sounds.
So if you look at this album now that it's finished and mixed and it's out there and it's living and breathing as its own piece of work, is there anything that surprised you about the process and what you ended up with? Is there any song in particular that you look at and go, wow, I didn't expect that I'd have a song like that on a Decemberist album?
Well, yeah, I think there's a bunch of them. I think, you know, the material came in and the material was the material. We didn't have any preconceived notions really about direction. It really kind of organically grew out of working in the studio and people bringing in instruments. And Jenny and Funk brought in a bunch of weird synthesizers. And so I
didn't know you were fans of New Order and Depeche Mode and all those bands.
Oh yeah, well absolutely. I mean that's to my mind that's been part of the fabric of the Decemberists from the get go. You know, I grew up, you know, Skritti, Politti, Depeche Mode, and New Order, The Cure, were all parts of my constellation of deities. And they just, I hear them in the December, so I think it requires, you know, some different instrumentation to kind of make it apparent, maybe.
So before we go back to the last couple of songs, talking about where you come from, you grew up in Montana.
Yes.
And one of the things that you guys have done is you've put together a festival. Mm-hmm. And in Missoula. So yeah. Tell us a little bit about that. And I've actually been to Missoula, and I don't think I've met anybody else who has. Montana is a place that not a lot of people have been to unless you sort of grew up there.
Yeah, I think more and more people end up there. Yeah, so I grew up in Montana. I grew up in Helena, Montana. And as a kid, discovering music, you know, relatively obscure, you know, Camper Van Beethoven, Robin Hitchcock, The Smiths, and things like that. I would always bemoan the fact that they would never play in Helena, Montana. You know, and they would always break up. You know, Husker Du and the Replacements broke up well before I ever had a chance to see them. And I would get so angry about it, and I'd kind of curse my luck and curse Montana. And so once I started a band myself and started touring nationally, I understood why people don't play Montana because it's really far away from everything else. And, it's kind of hard to get to. But I did feel like I owed it to my 12-year-old self to play Montana. So we've played it every record tour, we've played Montana. And then we wanted to do a kind of a hosted festival, and Montana seemed a great place to do it. Not only would we be playing in Montana, but also bringing other bands there. So hopefully, Belle and Sebastian played last year. It was the first time they'd ever played in Montana. Same with Real Estate, a bunch of other bands.
Right.
So it's pretty neat to do that.
So you're going to go out with two more songs, and the first song, I'll let you pronounce it.
Yeah, Rusalka, Rusalka. It's both and two songs, but it's kind of one song.
Well, and this is more in the theme, I guess, of what we have come to know from the Decembrists. It's like 25 minutes long or something.
Yeah, right, exactly. Get comfortable. I think it's a tidy eight
minutes.
Something.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming and playing for us, obviously. We appreciate it, and I know the crowd here does.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. Thank you so much for everybody coming out.
I'm Nick Harcourt. It's 88.5 FM. We've been delighted to be at Capitol Studios. Thanks to everybody here and the Decembrists. One more time.
Rusalka, Rusalka, your arms out of water, your hair like an alien blue. Dark-eyed Rusalka, your brow tressed in flowers, pale in a liminal. All that you are is a star on the water. Property lay, and you are my wild-eyed Rusalka, my river bride. Drag me down, take me away. where the wild rushes, my mother told me, they grow on the bankside along the salt sea. But I, being young, I heeded her none. So to the wild rushes the wind carried me. The summer was here and the sun it was.
Thanks everyone so much. Thanks, Nick.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much for being here.